It's 8 p.m. and you're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM on your dial and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman.
And I'm Robin Puget.
And tonight we're doing a profile of Realize Strategies Co-op. We're going to find out more about how and why Realize got started and the kind of work they do. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. I'm pleased to introduce Tim Ag, who is the chair of the board of directors of Realize Strategies Co-op. Tim spent 30 years as executive director of PLEA Community Services Society of BC, which supports children, youth, adults, and families facing significant challenges in their lives. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you.
You've had a long and distinguished career in the fields of social service and justice. And it was from the front lines of serving people at risk that you helped create what is now called Realize Strategies Co-op. Can you tell us that story?
I'd be happy to. A group of executive directors of primarily nonprofit social service agencies began a conversation in the late 1990s, motivated by a number of things. In part becoming a little tired of being told by other sectors of the economy how we should be running our business and how we should be more efficient and how we should be more effective and all of those things. And we decided that it was time to work together to try to find ways to advance our own interests, to build expertise that we didn't easily have available to ourselves, and to see what we could accomplish by embarking on a program of sort of sharing resources and formal collaboration. That, I guess, we spent about a year or so sort of talking it up. Finally got a core group of about 30 agencies who kind of got and sufficiently excited by the idea that they kind of signed up just on an invitation, would you mm-hmm. kind of jump in with us? And we were originally established as the United Community Services Co-op. We made the name change just a few years ago. And in the early years, worked really hard to try to experiment with a number of products and services that would be helpful to us. And we were driven into the kind of co-op model because of its democratic sort of decision-making, one member, one vote, which meant that we could provide equity to small organizations, big ones, rural, urban, and so forth. We intended to be provincial in scope. We wanted to ultimately support strengthening the economic base for nonprofits. And ideally to kind of enhance the bottom lines of nonprofit organizations in a self-financing and self-help model. So hence the choice of the co-op structure. We worked at a number of things, some of which we kind of cast aside after a while because they just didn't play out the way they thought we thought they would. Other services and products are still going strong after all these years. So, for example, there is a financial pool through those members who bank with VanCity that's similar to the pool arrangement that exists in the nonprofit housing sector and the co-op housing sector, which adds fairly significant interest income annually to the nonprofit members. We tried a variety of shared administrative services. Mm-hmm. Many of those really didn't play. The costs of doing them sometimes didn't actually weren't really justified given the economic benefit at the end of the day. But we tried all sorts of things. We discovered as we went that some of the most appealing and beneficial services were in fact what is now the core of the co-op's program, which is to provide strategic consulting services back to our members. And that's been a really interesting process, because what we discovered was that there is, through the co-op, expertise in the nonprofit sector and nonprofit co-op sector that you can't get as easily if you're buying strategic services, consulting services, on the private market. And it really helps to and the co-op's role in doing that work adds value to member agencies because of shared values, intimate knowledge of how the sector works, often knowledge of the organizations that because we're often providing services to our own members. So that's been a very successful development over the years, and is now at the core of what the co-op does.
And I think in our discussion before this evening, you had mentioned that there's a certain credibility of having expertise and knowledge of the sectors that you're dealing with, as opposed to a large, for example, consulting firm that's driven more by a business outlook.
I think there's a number of factors that come into play. You have a board of directors and a group of staff and consultants at the co-op who have long experience in the sector, who have lots of contacts in the sector, and who are part of the sector. So we kind of collectively own some responsibility for what goes on, and it's never simply a job that you do and then you move on.
Right.
There's sort of some sense of obligation to outcomes that's really important.
Before United Services Co-op began with those number of initial folks, what was it like to negotiate services, for your members, and in terms of plea, for example? What did you find? What, they say necessity is the mother of invention. So what was the atmosphere like that caused you folks to come together to say, hey, maybe there can be a different way of doing this, of ultimately serving our clients on who are our families or whoever on the front line? What was the atmosphere like that brought you to create this?
There was a period when social service agencies, particularly those who provided extensive contracted services to the province, and this has happened sort of numerous times over the decades, but at that point there was a sense of frustration from a number of us that we seemed to be either told that we're not efficient enough, or that there's too many of us and there should be a whole bunch of amalgamations forced, and a sort of sense that government somehow knew how to better structure all of our services. A number of us sort of thought that it was really time for us to get much more proactive ourselves, mm-hmm. and own those issues, mm-hmm. and figure out sort of for ourselves what options and models would work for us, and then figure out how to design our own futures to the greatest possible extent. So it was really very much a sort of, can we take charge of our own business here? Mm-hmm. Particularly in the early days, although I don't think it's any different now, it was pretty exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I was then executive director at PLEA, we were involved in at least a couple of initiatives that pushed us into really intensive conversations with other agencies about potential partnerships and some really depth work. Mm-hmm. was undertaken. Some of those didn't play out, but the learning involved was really mm-hmm. fantastic, and we couldn't have bought that kind of support on the private market. And we probably could never have found a funder to fund it.
So exactly. There were other agencies and organizations feeling the same way that you were at PLEA. Were they all social service agencies, or who were the initial people involved?
The initial group, and I guess about the first 30 or 40 agencies, were pretty much social service organizations. Majority Lower Mainland, but not exclusively by any means. Right from the beginning, there were members from North Island, Interior, mm-hmm. and so forth. The membership, as it expanded, then also extended out into other co-ops, into other nonprofits. There's been a few in the arts and in the environmental mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. So now the co-op membership is much more broadly based and much more expansive. That has sort of grown naturally, I think, with the reputation right. of the co-op.
Right.
So the social service nonprofits are still a significant part of the membership base, but it's really a broad nonprofit membership at this point, and very much provincial. The co-op also was instrumental in helping alliances of other nonprofits in three other communities in the province form local co-ops on their own, one in Williams Lake, another in the Shuswap area, and a third in the West Kootenays. And what became interesting there, and some of us in the Lower Mainland then tried to sort of pick up the ideas and sort of do sort of some local equivalents, they were finding that conversations around can we simply share services, can we share administration, and those mm-hmm. kinds of things really didn't go very far. What became really interesting was whether or not we could band together and actually share program delivery and share service delivery. Mm-hmm. And there's been some interesting developments in this province that are really quite exciting around how small community organizations mm-hmm. can, in fact, band together, sometimes over fairly significant geography, and end up with a much more robust local service system as a result.
So did you have a staff? Like, did United Services Co-op, like, have a staff and, you know, providing a range of services? Or kind of how did it work at the beginning?
Very small staff. I think it was two to start with.
Wow.
And then a group of people who kind of came on board on a sort of contract basis. So there was a sort of a team. We're now with a larger staff, and most of the consulting work is done by co-op staff now.
And it was initially strategic consulting. Is that what these members? How many members did you kind of, like, within the first 5 years, did you grow to?
Well, we grew to about 130 wow. or so, I think, and I'm not quite sure what the mm-hmm. exact number is.
And were you providing largely strategic consulting or negotiating?
That's how it evolved.
Right.
We have done a number of things. The financial pool, there was an insurance plan, which is still available. There was some stuff related to telephones. We looked at for agencies that were delivering group home residential services. Mm-hmm. At one point, we looked at the possibility of whether or not it was possible to do wholesale grocery purchases.
Right.
Discovered that was a brilliant idea in theory and a totally bad idea in practice. Partly because the industry was not at all interested, and partly because we discovered that local organizations wanted to take their clients shopping as part of a sort of a life skill development and kind of active engagement in the community process, rather than simply treat the purchase of groceries as a kind of, you know, get it done as quickly as possible and as cheaply as possible.
Was there a membership fee, like, at that time?
The
or
financing,
how did the financing
what
work?
What it was and it remains now, it's a membership is a one-time share purchase.
Right.
If you then are using co-op services, then you'll pay for those. There are differential rates depending on whether you're a member or non-member, of course. But no, there's no annual membership fee. It's a one-time share purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And then on some of the products, the co-op does get a small revenue stream off from those. And so that's been, you know, the co-op most years is running in the black.
So with two staff members and about 150 members... Yeah.
We're now about five staff members.
Right now, but at that time, how did that work? If I was an agency looking for support, was the time lag great, or whatever? Did the various agencies support each other? I'm just curious.
Everybody scrambled a lot.
Right. It must have been exciting, though.
It was very exciting.
Yeah.
And we were learning a great deal along the way. I think one of the things that was really important was that the founding chief executive officer, by the name of Tim Beachy, was mm-hmm. somebody who had been active and highly respected in the sector for a very, very long time. Mm. And he brought real credibility into the process, and we were just able to continue to build on that, the credibility that he brought. He was instrumental in helping then attract a really strong provincial sort of prospective board of directors that again, mm-hmm. Lent credibility to the co-op's work. So, and that also generated a huge amount of goodwill. I mean, there were people who were prepared to sort of say, you can't help me right now, but I'll wait a month
That's
or two
what I was
because
wondering.
I want you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were well established and known within right. those agencies as knowing your stuff, so to speak,
yeah.
and worth waiting for, it sounds like.
And a couple of elements about that were really important. One was that because particularly the co-op staff inevitably ended up learning an awful lot about the internal workings about a lot of organizations,
right.
the ability to sort of hold that information in trust and not become a provincial source of gossip
right.
was really, really critical to sustaining the co-op's reputation. And the other thing that we learned was that that the co-op was able to help the relationship between organizations in the sector and government because of the kind of conversations that they were able to have, and again, delivering consistent messages and saying the same things to people across ministries and government. And I think the co-op generated a lot of credibility for the sector in its relationship with the,
right.
with particularly the provincial government, but not exclusively.
And that takes you forward to where you are today, because having a unified message on issues of importance to your members and their clients is something hopefully the government will pay some attention to. But it is helpful to speak from the same hymn book, so to speak.
Yeah.
Looking back, what effect do you think over the last, I guess it's quite a while, 1998 or so,
yeah.
mm-hmm. to now?
Yeah, close to 20
close
years.
Close to 20 years. What effect do you think United Services and now Realize has had on the members it serves and the clients of those members, locally, nationally, perhaps even globally? What do you think the impact has been?
I'll only try to speak in the context of the province and the co-op membership. I think the co-op has been really successful in helping organizations build capacity, in helping organizations choose to cooperate with one another and work together and find common ground in order to enhance services. I think the co-op has consistently focused on the core of client service and service to the public, and I think the co-op has been helpful in reinforcing those values. I think the co-op has brought some additional strength to a number of organizations who weren't so strong initially, and certainly the networking that goes on now, I think the co-op's been very helpful in that. And currently the co-op is teaming up with other provincial sort of networks and federations and such on various issues of strategic interest, mutual interest, and continues to build new initiatives. Mm-hmm. I hope when John comes on shortly, you'll talk about the new brand new pension plan
yes.
that we're just launching, and that's a really exciting new development. So there is that ongoing sense of if there's something new and beneficial, we've probably got a hand in it.
Innovators, it sounds like.
And you bet.
My last question is, because you were one of the founding members of United Service Co-op, now Realize Strategies, Do you have any pearls of wisdom for other organizations that want to start a similar kind of service co-op or any kind of co-op, just based on your experience over the last almost 20 years?
If you're not accustomed to working that way, to teaming up with other organizations and figuring out where your common ground is, and you're afraid of it, and you've been too obsessed with the kind of competitive environment that often the social services sector, in particular the nonprofit sector, generally often gets sort of pulled into that environment, then my advice is give it a try. It can be a little awkward to kind of launch in and kind of get accustomed to it. Once you're there, it can open up opportunities that you never thought you had before and can be a strength-building process that you just is quite remarkable. And I would highly urge, I think particularly on a community-by-community basis, I would really want to see more and more of that sort of structured, formal commitment to collaborative work. I think the public gains, I think organizations gain out of that.
Thanks so much, Tim. It's been wonderful to talk to you this evening. Thanks so much for coming in and also for beginning our profile of Realize Strategies Co-op. John Kay is our next guest, and we'll chat with him shortly on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org.
Give me that.
It's mine.
I want it.
No, it's mine.
No, give it to me.
You have to give it back.
Stop. Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly, openly, in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM, on your dial and online at cooperadio.org. Try cooperating. You'll feel better for it.
Co-op Radio is now 42 years old. That is 294 in dog years. If Co-op Radio were a dog, it would be dead. So enough with the procrastination. Come help us celebrate Co-op Radio's birthday bash at the Wise Hall, Friday, March 31st. For more information, go to our website, because we have one. Cooperadio.org. COOP.
And we're back here on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tonight, I will be interviewing John Kay. He's the Chief Executive Officer at Realize Strategies Co-op. John has held several senior positions in private and public sector in Canada and abroad. He has been the chief operating officer at the WE Group of Companies, executive director of corporate development at the BC Ministry of Advanced Education. He's also chaired the boards of Fair Trade Canada and the BC Cooperative Association. We actually are on the board there together. And John's also been in the position of director and chair of the finance committee of Fair Trade International, which is interesting. So, John, we just heard about all the history of Realize, or United Community Services Co-op. Wanted to talk with you today a bit about its present form. And so wanted to get a sense of who your clients are today and what services you offer them.
Well, thanks, Robin. First of all, it's great to be here, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to your listeners about Realize. Today, our clients are a fairly broad-based group. Our core is and always has been in the nonprofit and cooperative sector. So we work with organizations that range anywhere from $50,000 or $100,000 a year organizations right up to $150 million organizations. We also work more broadly with what we generally call impact or mission-driven organizations, so for-profit, not-for-profit, but all driven by that common purpose that they put their mission or their purpose ahead of profit or any other objective.
And so what are people coming to you for the services? We heard a bit about strategic consulting services, but I really don't totally know what that means.
Yeah, it's a really interesting area, Robin. So broadly speaking, we work in three areas. Strategic consulting, which I'll talk a bit more in a moment. Human resources and human capital development, and executive recruiting. So strategic consulting is really a broad base of things. It's everything that you would think of that a nonprofit or co-op would need. It's strategic planning or business planning or market feasibility studies for a co-op or a social enterprise. But it's much broader than that too, because we tend to take on a lot of innovative or developmental projects. We, as you know, are working right now with one member, or two members actually, to develop a shared hub, a co-location space. We worked with another member, the BC Nonprofit Housing Association, to develop a captive insurance company, which is really a form of insurance company that's internally owned by an association of members. So those are just a couple of examples of the strategic consulting projects that we've done. Now, we also did a feasibility study and a real estate study for the Société Francophone de Mayotteville in Coquitlam, the historic Francophone organization. So it's really a very, very broad range. Strategic planning or strategic planning sessions and facilitation is probably the base of what we do, but it really broadens out. Because one of the things that we find is that our members and our clients look to us as a source of innovative thinking. So we spend a lot of time and invest a fair amount of money every year in having our staff team go to conferences, whether it's the International Co-op Summit, it's the Social Enterprise Summit. We're also a certified B Corporation. So we really spend a lot of time looking at those cutting edge movements that intersect between business and the nonprofit or the cooperative sector, and really try to bring that expertise back to our members and help them apply it. The work we do in human capital development, again, is very broad. It's everything from the very basic of help us write job descriptions, help us do some leadership coaching, right up to help us restructure our organization because we're in some difficulty and we really need some outside expertise to think about how we can get ourselves back on a sustainable footing financially, organizationally, in terms of people. And then we do recruiting. So all of that really is the classic headhunting at the senior management level. So we recruit executive directors, CEOs, finance directors, and so forth. And, you know, each of those are interlocking parts of what we do. Quite often we have clients who will come to us for more than one piece of work. So it might be a recruitment, and it might be some strategic or some kind of assistance in another area. We are actually working with a client right now who asked us to help them recruit a corporate controller, but also to help them set up their own office. They had been under the arm of a management organization, management services organization, which they're now moving away from, and needed help to secure an office, to get their IT system set up. So we've been helping with them with that as well.
And are all your clients members?
No, that's an interesting thing, Robin. And it's been part of the way that we have operated over the years. We have members who are often our clients, but we also have organizations who are not clients. And we've never really required organizations to be members in order to access our consulting services. We've really only required that for them to access the services that are the programs that Tim talked about in the earlier segment, the program we operate with Van City, our Cooperators Insurance Program, the new pension plan that we've just launched for nonprofit and cooperative organizations. But it was really a fluke of how we developed that we couldn't always ask organizations to become members, or in some cases we were working with organizations that wouldn't have qualified for membership.
Interesting. Okay. And so I guess I was curious about how this operates. Is it considered a second tier co-op? Like the your members are organizations, right?
Yeah, that's right, Robin. Okay. All of them are organizations.
And so how does that work? How is the organization governed from that perspective?
How's the organization governed? Board of directors,
yeah.
Elected by the membership.
At the AGM,
yeah. Pretty standard for a co-op.
Yeah.
Like many co-ops where we tend to spend a fair amount of time going and having to recruit people to join the board. We've had a very small, we've had a stable core of board members who've been with us for a long time. Some newer members, but you know, we have a fairly small membership and it is spread across the province. So it tends to be fairly small. Most of our members really engage with us for the services they need more so than involvement in our governance.
And do you feel, I know that we talked about a one-time membership fee. I was just overhearing your conversation in the hallway there about some desire for this ongoing membership fee to keep members engaged. How do you keep members engaged when it is like a one-time buy-in?
Well, good question, Robin. So it's a work in progress, yeah. I have to say that. We've really experimented in the years that I've been at Realize to look at how we can best engage members. So it's some of the classic things. We send out newsletters. We're very active on social media. We try to get our members to follow us on social media because it really is the best way to keep updated. We have periodically done webinars with members on various knowledge topics, and it's something that we're trying to ramp up more and more. But it's been a real work in progress to figure out how we can do that. And you know, we're like a lot of co-ops in the sense that we have a core of our members that are very engaged and have been very engaged for a long time. And then we have another group of members who we don't hear from very frequently, or we hear from really when they need a service from us. So, you know, it's always a challenge for me as the CEO to try to think with my team. We have 140, 150 members. How do we keep them engaged, mm-hmm. given that we don't have a membership, we don't have annual membership dues, we don't have anything that kind of forces that annual contact. And everybody's busy, and they're getting stuff coming through their email all the time. So again, how do we break through and remind them that we're here to support them? We're here to offer them the services we have, but we're also here to help them if there's something that they need and that we haven't offered yet.
I think Sandy has a question.
One of our guests last year was actually the first guest that I spoke with was the BC Libraries Co-op. And yeah. I know you've, and Ben Hyman, who is not with the co-op anymore, but you did some work for the BC Libraries Co-op. Just as an example, could you tell us what you did for them? Because they're a really interesting organization.
Yeah, we've had quite a fruitful relationship with the BC Libraries Co-op. And I have to say, actually, commandeered Ben a couple of years ago to join the board, and he's still the vice chair of our board.
Oh, great.
As well as a colleague of Robin's and mine on the BC Co-op Association board. So we first worked with BC Libraries Co-op, I think it was about 4 years ago, in helping them develop their strategic plan. Earlier this year, we did some more work with the board and really on helping them in the run-up to developing their new strategic plan to start thinking about revenue generation, about innovation. And then about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, they retained us to search for Ben's successor. Mm. So we're very actively in that process right now of trying to help them hire their next ED to succeed Ben, which I have to say is an extremely tall order.
Must be a big challenge.
Ben left a very large set of shoes to fill, and when we talked to the board, the first thing they said to us was, well, convince him to stay with us. If you can't do that, then clone him.
Right.
And if you can't do either of those two, then find us a really good executive director. And, you know, and that's, again, that's something that we were really excited to do. Not just because they're a member, but because it's such an interesting organization doing such amazing work across the country.
And really serving a lot of members, library members, and, you know, through it, so many patrons of libraries. So it's really wonderful to see the connections between the Libraries Co-op serving its members and Realize helping the BC Libraries Co-op. I don't know, as I've gotten into learning about the co-op sector,
I think that was a good segue for you into co-ops because you are a librarian.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that was really neat.
And it's a great success story, Sandy. Yeah. I don't think many people realize that although it's called the BC Libraries Co-op, it has members right across the country.
Exactly.
200 and some odd members now.
Yes, and universities and public libraries and other institutions and that. So that's a great example. I'm also aware that Realize did some kind of study for the healthcare co-ops of Canada?
We're in the middle of doing that right now. Yeah, we were asked by the cooperators to just come in and give the board of the Health Co-op Federation of Canada a hand really looking at their long-term strategic direction. You know, they have been a really great organization doing some amazing work across the country on an absolute shoestring budget, with Vanessa Hammond, their chair, fulfilling that role as well as a managing director or executive director role.
And very dedicated.
Very dedicated, yeah. But really thinking about in this broad spectrum of health and as a national organization, where do they go from here?
Right.
What does it look like for them to begin a transition when Vanessa eventually steps down from the chair role, and to begin to really grow and imagine what the future can look like for them? So that's a project that we're right in the middle of as we speak.
Great.
Another thing I wanted to pick up on was one of the member services you were talking about. We last week were talking about pensions and cooperatives and retirement, and now you have a new pension plan in place. And I'm curious, how does that work for a cooperative that wants to take part in that? It sounds like an interesting program. It's not one I've heard about a lot with co-ops.
Yeah, and it's probably helpful to give you just a little bit of the history too, Robin. There had been work done over a number of years by an organization initiative called the BC Nonprofit Labor Market Initiative, which was really trying to look at issues related to recruitment, retention, human resources broadly in the nonprofit sector. One of the things that they had been looking at was the creation of a pension plan. Because they had done some work, they'd done some surveys and recognized that not only was there a huge gap, but there was a huge need for nonprofits to have access to a pension plan, particularly those who weren't part of the public sector pension plans, which is quite a number. When that initiative folded, we started internally to say, well, look, it's a huge need and we recognize it's a huge need. So is there something we can do to fill it? And by virtue of being a member owner of the cooperators, I happened to be back at a cooperators AGM and said to the staff, look, what could we do? Do we as a cooperative offer anything like a pension plan? And the answer was, yeah, we do, and we can. So I started talking to the board, and we all recognized that this was a real opportunity for us to do what Realize was set up to do in the first place, to create these kind of shared services and programs that fill a need and that do things that individual co-ops or nonprofits couldn't do. So we set up a plan which was intended to make it as easy as possible for an organization to join. So the way it works is you contribute 1% of payroll for each of your employees. It's voluntary, so you don't have to make all your employees participate if you don't want to or if they don't want to. They can match. You can decide that they have to match. And then you can grow it. So you can start very low and scale it up as you begin to have more money or begin to see that you want to increase what you contribute to your employees' retirement. But our idea was, let's make it as easy as possible for every organization from the smallest to the largest to participate.
Interesting. So it's not necessarily just a cooperative opportunity. It's any of your clients across the board.
Yeah, it's anybody who would qualify for membership. So co-op, nonprofit, B corporation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neat. Well, thank you for sharing with us sort of the picture of Realize Strategy Co-op today. It's great to just get a better sense of how it all operates there. I think I'll kick it back to you there, Sandy.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Robin. We're continuing our profile of Realize Strategies Co-op, and joining us now is Ann Kutcher, Executive Director of West Coast Family Centers. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you very much.
Ann, West Coast Family Centers serves a number of people in the community, families, children at risk. Can you just tell us a little bit about your organization?
Sure. We're registered a charity, and we've been in the Lower Mainland since about 1984. And we offer a range of parenting and family strengthening programs where the child is always in the best interest. Our programs are always client-focused and strength-based, and we provide individualized services to meet all client needs. We have a number of different services that we provide, and we serve families in different ways, such as one-to-one or clinical counseling, play therapy. We provide supervised access services for children in care to meet up with their parents, education and support, community groups and workshops. And we're funded by MCFD, United Way, federal government, Fraser Health Foundations, direct access grants, as well as donors.
And your organization has had a long association with what was called the United Community Services Co-op. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that goes back a long time, and I'm actually proud to say that I've been at West Coast Family Centers for 33 years.
Wow.
Since its inception. And so it was a long time ago, I think, when we were using archaic phone systems that we looked at United Community Services Co-op to provide us with a looking into sort of a phone system that wouldn't break our bank. And that was sort of our initial contact with Realize.
And right now, you and John Kay from Realize Strategies are working on a pretty exciting project to serve your clients. So we're going to have a bit of a discussion about what that is and how the two of you have worked together. So, Anne, why don't you describe a bit of that, what you're working on currently?
Yes, it's a very, very exciting project, and we are I'd like to say the stage way down the road. However, it's been 4 years in the making. So John and I have had a very close relationship over the last almost 4 years. It started out with a colleague of mine, Ingrid Castens from Pacific Community Resources, that said, "I got a really good idea. And why don't we create a hub?" And then having a conversation with the province, and then going from there to saying, who do you think that might be the perfect person to be our consultant in this endeavor? And we both thought, well, let's talk to John Kay. We hadn't really had a lot to do with John at that point, because I think he was fairly new to you coming into that business. Mm-hmm. But we gave John a call, and John came down, and things progressed, and we realized, well, we needed a feasibility study, and then from there we needed to have a business plan, of course. And so John helped us to create that business plan, which was ended up being presented to both our boards by John himself. And then we also needed a functional program analysis, which I had never heard of before, but I was assured that we actually did need that, in fact. And John was able to provide us with a fellow by the name of Scott Hughes to provide that service for us through Realize Strategies. John has also done a number of briefing notes to our boards to keep them up to speed. And ultimately now, where John's position is he has become our go-between between the province that we're working with, as well as the city.
So when you say a hub, what does that mean to West Coast Family Centers and the clients that it serves?
What it means is a co-location arrangement and a facility to create a vibrant community-oriented campus for administration and delivery of a wide range of nonprofit community-serving programs and activities. And such other activities are necessary and desirable for those purposes and that serve the community.
So right now you have a number of offices around the Lower Mainland. Would you be amalgamating them into this one location, or sort of what would be the benefits of having a hub?
Well, the benefit is really for the community more than our organization as a whole. It's really about the service to the clients within the community and offering a variety of services all in one place. It allows the client to be able to come in and not have to tell their story over and over again. And in fact, they're coming in and we're all working together with the same family to provide the best service that we can.
So ease of service and in one location. And
correct.
And John, what are some of the challenges in getting something like that off the ground?
Well, the real challenge, Sandy, is, you know, it's a complex project to begin with, just to align the needs. At the time when we started, it was really three organizations. It was West Coast Family Centers, PCRS, and also Family Services of Greater Vancouver, along with the Ministry of Child and Family Development, who will also be locating some of their staff into this facility. So really trying to understand how to bring these organizations together, how to create a campus, as Anne described it, that allows for really a kind of cross-pollination or cross-fertilization of ideas and experience with the staff and shared facilities. And so you can just imagine trying to balance all of the needs of the different organizations, and then on top of that, working with the city through a fairly complex process to have them take a building that had been really for purely market rental purposes and understand the need to think about it differently, to really think about how this concept can benefit the city in terms of retaining nonprofit jobs, in terms of creating something that really benefits clients. And speaks to a lot of the values and the aspirations that the city has laid out over the last number of years. But the complexity of pulling all those pieces together mm-hmm. and then figuring out, okay, now that we know what we need and we know what it's going to cost, how are we going to pay for it?
And has the city been receptive? Do you require a lot of arm twisting, or is the current government of the city sort of in sync, as you say, with some of the values in this project?
The answer at the end of the day is yes. It took us a bit of time to get there.
a lot of time, I understand.
It took a lot of time to get there, partly because without getting to all the arcaneness, the city has two different ways they classify their properties. This was in a portfolio called the Property Endowment Fund, which is meant to generate market rents. So it was a bit of a challenge for the staff to really be able to step outside and say, okay, we need to think about this differently. And then we went through a series of back and forth conversations once we understood what it was going to cost to do the renovation. But at the end of the day, the current director of the Real Estate Services Department said, you know, I really think the city should fund the capital improvements. And to his credit, and the credit of a couple of his senior colleagues, they went to the mayor and council and proposed that the city should pay for those tenant improvements. And the mayor and council agreed.
That's wonderful.
And I have to say, Councillor Reimer has been a huge champion of this project. I ran into her in, I think it was late November, in the Ottawa airport. Late night, we were both coming back from Ottawa, and the first thing she said to me was, so how's the hub project going? Is there anything I need to know? Councillor Reimer has really been keeping tabs to make sure that this, because she's been a very strong champion of this project from the start. And has really, I think, been instrumental behind the scenes in helping us to get it to where it is now.
Do you have a location for the hub?
Yeah, it's the building that West Coast Family Centers has their administrative office in. So it's 2780 East Broadway. It's Broadway and Caslow.
Oh, that's a great location.
Yeah.
And do you have a potential launch date? I know these things take a long time, but are you getting sort of near the horizon? Can you see it? Anytime soon?
I've been able to see it for 4 years. However, I think that we're probably a year or 14 months out of, you know, having something that looks like it's in completion mode.
We're just trying to wrap up the details on the lease structure, and then we have to go do another round of planning and then start the process. And again, because there are the city and the province and the agencies involved, the co-op, it's a bit complex. So yeah, as Anne said, it's probably 14 or so months before we actually see the project complete.
John, what is this project meant for Realize Strategies? Just, I'm throwing that out there.
What it's really meant for us it's been a tremendous opportunity to work with two very well-established, both members and community service organizations, and help to bring to life a vision for doing things differently. I think Tim had talked in his segment about a lot of discussion in the past about shared services and sharing ideas. And so this is something that's been near and dear to our hearts for many, many years. And this is really seeing it come to life in a major way. And it's been just a treat to work with Anne and Ingrid and their staff teams in this project.
This is a wonderful example of collaborating on a vision and hopefully seeing it through. It sounds like you're on your way. And last word to you. I wish we had more time to talk about this. It's such an interesting collaboration and example of, you know, what we see in communities these days. Anne?
Well, I'd just like to say that we couldn't have got to this point without Realize. And, you know, Realize Strategies has a lot of things that they can offer. Certainly the nonprofit organizations, is financially, in our streams and provide very, very good service. And we've used many different services of Realize.
Thank you so much to our guests tonight. Like I say, maybe we'll be able to catch up with Realize and more of its members down the road. But I think we've had a good introduction. And I always love learning about the ways people are collaborating to enrich our communities. So a big thank you to our guests tonight. Anne Kutcher from West Coast Family Centers, Tim Ag and John Kay from Realize Strategies Co-op. For more information about Realize Strategies, go to their website, realize.coop. Or email them at info@realize.coop. And Robin, we're ready to talk about next week. What's up on the show next week?
So next week will be our monthly check-ins with the BC Co-op Association, Patrice Pratt and Tom Armstrong, with the Co-op Housing Federation, and also Ross Gentleman talking about co-ops. It's the kickoff of our election month, so we'll be talking about what's affecting co-ops in the upcoming election. That's it for us tonight on Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Thanks to my co-host, Sandy, and to all of the Each for All team here at Co-op Radio and our guests tonight. We'll see you next Tuesday at 8 p.m. here on Vancouver Co-op Radio. Have a cooperative evening.